Okay, recording is started. Hello, welcome. Thanks for being here today. We are in month 10 of the Yoga of Entrepreneurship Thought Song, where we have, for the last 2 months, been talking about practices and rituals to bring into the way that you grow and build your business. And today I'm very excited to have with us as a guest wisdom teacher, Barry Tesler Linden, who is a financial therapist, a mentor coach, and the founder of Art of Money.
Hi.
Barry has guided.
Hi.
Sorry,
Hi.
There was a pause. I was going to say more about you.
Hi.
So welcome, Barry.
Thank you.
For those of you who don't know Barry, she's guided thousands of people to new, empowered, and refreshingly honest relationships with money through her nurturing, body-centered approach. So I'm glad to have Barry here. Her approach is fresh and loving, and I can't wait for what she has to share with you. Let's start at the top, if we can, Barry. Let's give people kind of an understanding. If we're going to talk about money practices, tell us kind of what a money practice is from your perspective and, you know, why it could be valuable. So we're kind of all starting in the same place.
Okay. Well, let's see. I might have to back up a little bit. And
sure.
And, you know, so similar to you, I love hearing that you all are in your 10th month of a year long, right? Because that's how I love to teach too. And like you, used to teach in every single format imaginable and then finally realized, this work is, it takes a lot more time to integrate, to understand its tools and practices and emotional intelligence that we just simply were not taught, you know, from grade school on up. And so, I, like you, teach a year long, and we begin with the money healing part. I just want folks to know that, and we can talk about that more, but I know we're talking about money practices today, but I teach three phases. So we do deep, you know, inner money healing work first about your money story and what you learned from your family of origin and what you rebelled against and all of it. You know, what is your money story, your strengths, your challenges? Really getting in there, doing lots of forgiveness work and money healing rituals and on, right? And then we arrive at money practices. So for me, you know, they can't be separated. And after money practices, then we go to money maps, which is all about the visioning. So money practices is kind of the second phase. And they, you know, all need to be connecting. But for me, you know, early on, I my background was as a dancer and as a therapist and as a creative person who was on a spiritual path and was surrounded by people who were on a spiritual, psycho-spiritual path. And I studied to be a somatic therapist at Naropa University. And the missing piece in my entire education, not just at Naropa, it was so glaring that it was so missing at Naropa. Because we were being trained to be therapists and hold deep space for everyone. And we studied every topic under the sun except for money. And so for me, when my school loan came due, it became so obvious that this was a missing piece, you know, emotionally, practically, psychologically, spiritually, and that if I was going to ever sit down to even create a private practice, even sit down to look at my numbers, even sit down to learn a bookkeeping system, even sit down to have a relationship with money. I mean, I wasn't doing any of that. You know, it was all money is, I'm sure you've covered all of this, you know, and I had to developmentally move through this myself, you know, thinking money wasn't spiritual. I wasn't supposed to strive for money, want money. So I had to work through all of that and had no relationship to money. So when I finally realized I need to have a relationship to money, I need to merge heaven with earth. I knew that I was going to have to bring all the creativity, the deeper meaning, the beauty, the fun, the playfulness, and on. Did I say creativity? You know, that I bring to every other aspect of my life. I had to bring those qualities to my relationship to money. And so when I was crafting my, you know, I call it the art of money now. I used to call it conscious bookkeeping. When I was putting this all together, it was, how can I, you know, let people know that this can be fun and meaningful and creative and that there's more going on here with the numbers? And because when I decided to have a relationship with money and step into the doorway instead of, like, running away or traveling forever, you know, and never coming back, you know, I stepped in and I just started creating it in a really fun, creative way. So for me, money practices was, hey, we have practices in every area of our life. Like, your crew knows this, right? We have a meditation practice. My husband, you know, has always done sitting meditation, and I've always done movement meditation. So I did authentic movement for many, many years, or I hike on my trail every day, or, you know, we are, or many of your folks have yogi practices, and on and on. And I wanted to bring all of those concepts and tools and practices into my relationship to money. So it's similar to having a yoga practice, and we all get to craft it in a way that works for us. So, you know, is it every day? Is it every few days? Is it twice a week for 30 minutes just to begin, you know? Some of my folks need to begin 5 minutes a day or 10 minutes just to get the grooves going. And
I'm glad you said that, because I think what I'm thinking about as you're talking about all this is where you step back to, and to the healing part. And so I'm wondering if you can say anything more about that, if we're avoiding or hesitating in approaching or creating practices for ourselves around money. How do we begin to enter that? And is it through a suggestion, like you just said, like do it for 5 minutes, do it for 2 minutes, just take a peek?
You know, that's how it is for a lot of my folks. I mean, a lot of my folks needed to do the deeper money healing work first. They were not even going to learn a bookkeeping system or even go online and even research what is iBank or Mint or YNAB or QuickBooks. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't even go there until they learned the first tool that I know you know about and that I love. It's my favorite tool ever, and it's the body check-in. So why don't we just talk about that first? Because I mean it's a first step in a money practice. You know, you sit down for your 5 minutes or your 30 minutes or, you know, every month for an hour, and you begin with a body check-in first, right? And what a body check-in is you all have your version of it. It's stopping and pausing and letting yourself get curious of physically what's going on, letting yourself notice what the sensations are of movement, stillness, letting yourself notice the emotional terrain, the feelings, how many are there, what are they. They're all welcome here, you know. They all come up in our relationship to money, the whole spectrum, you know. So what is it? Where's your breath? How deep? How shallow? And on and on. And for me, I bring the body check-in to every single money interaction that I have on a daily basis. So for me, this tool is my practice. It's part of my money practice. So when I'm going to look online and look at my numbers, when I'm going to the grocery store, when I'm going to have a money conversation with my honey, you know, when I'm going to tell clients my fees, or, you know, have a discussion about that, or on and on. So body check-in is the practice for me. It's one of the, you know, there in money practices, I can go on and on for hours and days, really, and we'll talk about, like, what do you do on a practical level, emotional, psychological, spiritual. I have money practices for all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the first one is the body check-in. It really is. It's one of those so simple yet so potent, profound tools that it's like a living daily, it's a living practice. It helps you stop and pause. It helps you take a deep breath. It helps you begin to pull apart your money story and all the threads of what makes that up. So for me, a lot of my folks cannot sit down and learn QuickBooks or YNAB or even look at their numbers and not completely glaze over, you know, or have full judgment coming up really strong, you know.
I do know.
Yeah.
I totally get it. I've been there. Sometimes it still happens.
Oh, well, no, please. Well, no, we all need to know. Of course it still happens. It happens for me years later.
Yeah.
You know, in the middle of buying a car, we were buying an electric car a few years ago. And, you know, my husband had wanted an electric car for years. And we had been talking about this for a long time. And then finally, like one day, we were at a cafe that just happened to be right next to the green car dealership. And suddenly, we were going for a test drive. But it wasn't sudden. This was like, had been an ongoing conversation. But we're in the car dealership looking at all the numbers, talking numbers. And I could feel I was starting to hyperventilate. I was starting to get very anxious, and I said to my husband and to, you know, the really nice car salesman, I was like, excuse me, I need to go to the bathroom, and I told my husband I'm going to do a body check-in, and I went to the bathroom, and I did a full body check-in in the bathroom and just calmed myself down, got to understand what I needed, what was going on, you know, got my breath deeper in my body, and came back and sat down and said, honey, you know, in order for this to work for me, I need to talk about, you know, where we're at in cash flow right now, what we have in savings, so short-term, mid-term, future goals, how does this fit in? How does this fit in with our values? I needed to have an entire money date in the car dealership, right? But the body check-in and being able to not just do the body check-in but work with myself, which I know all your folks know how to do, you know, it's not as though these feelings are going to go away. They can become more neutral, right? But I don't believe that, like, one day we just wake up, the feelings are gone. They just, we gain more capacity to work with them and understand with them and be with them and understand what we need, you know, in that moment and support ourselves. So I don't think, like, money, emotions, my work is not to have them go away, right? It's to give us more tools of how to be with them and understand them, right, and still go forth. Yeah.
Yes. So we start with the body check-in. We gain a lot of insight into where we are at, grounding, such a beautiful way to come back into your body, because I think, well, what I experience is we exit, right? We glaze over. We don't have connection with ourselves. And for me, that's when I make bad choices, for example, or get paralyzed, right? It's like either a bad choice or it's no choice at all. So where do we move from there? Is it a matter of taking that in and using that information that comes up?
Okay, there's so many directions we can go here now, because what you're describing how you do it, right? Which is you check out, you glaze over, right? You leave your body a bit, right? And that's a bit of my version too. Or you make a bad decision, what you say, or you don't make any decision, right? So I just want everyone to know that there's certainly many universal themes when it comes to our relationship to money that I can talk about. And I want everyone to really understand their own story, right, and their own patterns. So other people get really pissed. Other people get really strong. My husband calls me a freight train when I really want something. And that only happens, it's happened when I knew we were going to have a child. It happened when we were going to move into the house that we're in 6 years ago. So I don't pull that card a lot, but when I get really clear, I can get really strong and clear, right? So sometimes my husband's version is he gets very scared and he wants to go more into collapse, you know. So we all do different versions, and so we just really need to understand, like, do we get pissed? Do we get really anxious? Do we get really excited and change? And how can we help ourselves make better decisions? Do we need a few days to think about it? Do we need to ask ourselves certain questions? You know, now it's very different buying a car than, let's say, buying a new dress, or, you know, those would be very different. So that's more of a process of how do we make good money decisions, and that's more of the money map work for me, which is all about our numbers and visioning. But money practices, the step before that, is is there's a lot of practical stuff to be done. And, you know, I'm going to start with the basics. So we need to find a bookkeeping system that works, and we need to learn how to use it, and we need to learn how to look at our numbers. And if you would have told me that years ago, I would have, like, swore at you, you know, or like, no, no way. I don't need to do that. That's so boring. But another part of me thought I wasn't smart in that way, you know. So mm-hmm. if I'm not good at math, then there's no way I'd be able to learn a bookkeeping system. If I'm a creative person, there's no way I'd be able to learn how to use it. And it's just not true. These systems. So another little tip here is that for me, I needed someone to sit me down and hold my hand when I was learning QuickBooks. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, brought the tissues because I was definitely had some tears, and I brought really amazing organic dark chocolate. And that's how I learned how to set up a bookkeeping system. That may seem like ridiculous for some people, but I knew that's what I needed, where my husband could just teach himself Mint or iBank on the fly and start using it, you know? And so, you know, as entrepreneurs, we need to get a bookkeeping system and set it up and realize, like, we either can teach ourselves or we may need to hire someone on our financial support team, which is a really important part of money practices for me, I know I'm kind of jumping all over the place because, you know, we have a potential big decision going on after this. I'm a little excited.
Yes, you're a little excited. It's okay. We can follow you. I'll circle back if we need to.
Circle back. But, you know, first step is the money healing work and the body check-in tool to bring everywhere. You know, I just think that brings so much awareness to our money story and our internal patterns and our external patterns, and helps us really understand what's working and what's not, helps us learn about ourselves so that we can make different choices, you know, or better choices, right? And then money practices, this is where we start moving into learning the language of money and setting up a bookkeeping system, and you need to determine, you know, can you teach yourself how to use one of these systems, or do you need some hand-holding from a bookkeeping trainer, you know? And then that takes a while to learn how to set up a system and use it. But for me, as a creative entrepreneur, it was a huge learning curve, but it's what taught me about money and accounting, and it allowed me to look at the numbers for the first time and begin to, after a few years of having data, I could start to see what are my patterns, what's working, what's not, what is the animal of my business, what does it want to be, what are the seasons of it, what are the phases, how does cash flow work, where are the dips, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, again, the money practices seem so simple, and they seem so boring, but they're not. They're just like the essential foundation. So get someone to teach you QuickBooks or Cashew or Wave. Those are some of the business bookkeeping systems, or Xero. I love QuickBooks. Some people think it's, you know, way too much, but I loved it because it taught me how to categorize things. It taught me what a chart of accounts was. And if you would have said a chart of accounts years ago, you've probably heard me tell this story, Rebecca, right? That when,
yes.
when I first heard that term, I heard chart of accounts, like one word. I didn't even know what the heck they were saying. And it's just a chart of accounts, and there's only five. And, you know, in every accounting system, there's assets and liabilities and equity and income and expenses, and that's the bones of a bookkeeping system.
So talk a little bit about that, because you talked about the language of money, and now you're speaking the language of money, and I know that can be foreign for us, for most of us, when we start doing this. So what about the language of money, and how is that impactful, and how can people start to get comfortable?
Okay. So this is, you know, this is another thing. Like, I remember having an accounting class in high school, and, you know, it kind of made sense, but it didn't. And I just thought, again, it's a language that is so foreign to me. And I remember learning Hebrew growing up, and then I learned Japanese for a few summers. And, you know, learning the language of money and accounting felt, it was though it was going to be as hard as learning Japanese, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I had to get some people to hold my hand. As I was saying, like, I had some great bookkeeping trainers sit me down and just show me how to navigate around QuickBooks while I did my body check-ins and ate my chocolate. And, you know, so that was one way. Literally just having a bookkeeping practice and tracking every few days, and then learning how to reconcile, and then learning how to print out the reports and what are the names of the reports and what's an income mm-hmm. and expense statement, and, you know, just doing the practice and learning it one step at a time, one baby step at a time, you know, helped me learn the language. I also did get out accounting books, and, you know, to the utter surprise of my husband, you know, like, I was suddenly reading accounting books, like Accounting for Dummies, which is a terrible name, but, you know, it's, I was just reading those to try to understand this language. And then as soon as I learned that language, then when I started teaching it in my work, I had to find more meaning in it or make it more playful or make it more fun. And so I immediately started changing the names. And I said, first learn, you know, I encourage everyone to learn the language, like what's a chart of accounts and what are the names of the reports and how do you read them. And then if you need to rename things, like who wants to call a budget? You know, that's just
not fun.
Awful. You know, it's awful. I mean, it feels like a terrible, rigid diet instead of, no, this is our numbers and our vision and our values is something we dance with. We are dancing with a few steps forward, a few steps back. We are dancing with every month, right? And figuring out what works, what doesn't, what phase of life we're in, what are our values, on, right? So renaming it, I used to call it a map of intention. I call it a money map. You know, I've heard everything. I mean, people rename debt categories so they don't feel so harsh and intense. And I've had people rename a liability or a debt to, you know, my big life transition or a huge Italian experience, a huge Italian journey that changed my life, you know, to changing expense categories to create, to have more of your values imbued in them so you feel more excited to sit down and engage with them and you can, you know, rename anything. And some of my folks, you know, write a whole sentence like for a new name, and other people just rename it creativity or, you know, healthy body or on, but it's, you rename those categories so that it's based on your values and what's really important to you. And then imagine sitting down to a money map or a map of intention. That way, it's just a whole different animal. It's a whole different, you want, there's a connection that can be made. Your numbers are just not your numbers. They represent, are you living in alignment with your values, you know, or not? And we're always tweaking and updating and fine-tuning that, yeah.
Yeah, that is so powerful to sit down and really connect up. Oh, my gosh. Okay, this is where, one, either this is where I'm spending my money, and this is the value that I'm placing. These are the values that it's going toward, or wait, no, this is where I want, this is where I want to place the value on. It's really powerful to make that shift from it being, quote, a line item or a name that someone else had designated. I know,
or just
for me,
taxes,
that,
or just like, I have to, right,
it's just because, so that, like, right, so yeah, there's a common language that someone else can understand, you know, for the numbers work. But when we're working with our own numbers, for me, the difference has been that connection that you just spoke about, that there's something meaningful in my life or my business that I'm creating or that I'm allocating resources to. Otherwise, things just feel like, it feels like my money is just being taken away from me. That makes, it's a strange reaction on some level.
Yeah, that's not.
But on
the
other
level, keep going. Yeah, keep going.
Go ahead. You've heard it 100 times.
Well, no, but everyone's different. A lot of us do feel like there's some voice or a parental figure or someone who's going to look at our numbers and tell us how we're supposed to be spending or that we're doing it wrong or we're not doing it right or, you know, on and on. And a lot of us have those voices. So to, you know, be, so the third tier is like creating a money map in three tiers and really mapping out how do you define basic needs and how do you define comfortable lifestyle and how do you define ultimate and really mapping that out with what's your vision of the concept but also with the numbers. And it's not anyone else's definition, right? And it's not based on anyone else's values. And when we do that, you know, even, I mean, we have differences even in, you know, in two people coming together and how they spend money, let alone imagine the family mm-hmm. you grew up in. Everyone spends money differently according to their values, and it can be so painful to spend differently than other people or to feel the judgment or to literally get the judgment. And yet this is so important to us, right, to, as you're saying, like really get clear about our values. And then connect this with how we're spending, how we're earning, how we're saving, and make this whole area really meaningful. And that's how we make our decisions. Yeah.
Do you see any places where, I know that we're all different, so different things can come up for us, and things that seem smoother for some might be sticky for others, but is there any consistency sort of in working with business owners? Is there any consistency around what you've seen of where they get stuck or things that are sticky or where we seem to commonly stumble?
There are so many. I mean, so the business owners that I work are more the creative entrepreneurs, right? And mm-hmm. so that's your community as well, right?
Yes.
And, I mean, we get stuck in many places, so I'll just name some of them. One is just, you know, all the stuff around money is not spiritual, or I shouldn't strive for money, or I should just do my good work and somehow I'm going to get paid, or, you know, mm-hmm. there's that. Then there's this other huge thing that I've seen woven in from day one, and it's about our value. And we're 70% done, 75% done with my book, The Art of Money Manual. Mm. And so, you know, all of this is being clarified more. And one of the chapters is, we were going to write an entire chapter about value, even though we could write a whole book about it. And it's everything from number one is that a lot of my folks don't know their value, haven't fully been able to claim it yet, clarify it yet. Like, and it's this catch-22. It's this dichotomy in that we're born, you know, uniquely valuable. We're born with our full worth, like just being born a unique human, right? So we can never put a dollar amount on our value, and our value and worth has nothing to do with the amount of money that we have in our bank account, right?
Right.
So there's that reality that so many of us forget. I can remember, you know, in my 20s, just totally not getting what I came here to do or what my value was or knowing it, you know? And mm-hmm. then there's the other side of it. And so there is all this internal work to do around cultivating and claiming value more. And I do a lot of it. And it's everything from learning how to say no more and more elegantly and healthy boundaries and really understanding what we're great at and what we suck at. And that's all the internal work. And then there's this external work about how do we actually create a business model and mm-hmm. a livelihood that is working and that feels great, and where we take our inner gifts and skill sets and superpowers and native genius and we bring that to the marketplace, right? And we need to price it. And I know you've done all of this work, but this is, you know, this is a big part of my work too. We need to price it, but for me it's also about creating an entire business model mm-hmm. that includes all of our values, like family for me and rest and hiking on my mountain every day and self-care, you know, and being able to give my students like the best of me and give my material in the most generous way possible. And it's taken me years to figure out that the year-long model was that, you know, as a teaching model and as the most lucrative business model, right?
Yes, and yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that, because that, what you just described, is exactly the work that the folks that I'm working with are doing.
Yeah.
They're in that place of saying, what is really going to work for me and my work, the people who want my work, who are drawn to my work, as an entire business model, a holistic business model that takes into account exactly what you just said. How do I show up my best for my people? And that incorporates rest. And we're finding that that is a real challenge. It almost feels as if we're flying, I think we are, it's not even an almost, flying in the face of a lot of years of training and a lot of cultural pressures to do more and work harder and be bigger. And so thank you for sharing all of that.
Yeah, you're all different. I mean, I think it depends on our age. So you mm-hmm. know, when we were growing up, and did we work in the corporate world or not?
Mm-hmm.
No, really, because that has its own set of philosophy
Absolutely.
And beliefs and right indoctrination. And I never stepped foot. Like, my last job was when I was 28, so I'm 46. I knew I could not work for someone else for a long time, right? I tried mm-hmm. it. So, I mean, I think there's also, like, are you more of a type A personality, too? And do you feel like you mm-hmm. need to, you know? So there's so many different flavors. And then there's also this whole myth of either you can be creative or make money, you know? And
yeah.
so that's just like the starving artist, you know, can you be mm-hmm. a thriving artist? And so, or can you be a thriving healer? So all of those myths, I think, are shifting and changing. And I call it like a nut to crack, or our koan to live with, or this conundrum that we all get. And, you know, we need to figure it out. Like, we need to find our way through from all different angles. And, you know, I have a colleague, and her favorite business model is doing 3-month programs. And then she gets mm-hmm. the whole summer off. And I tried that, and what I didn't like about it was just that then you had to register people again. And I did that for 10 years, you know, like every 8 weeks I was starting a new class back in the day, you know, or starting 3 classes.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's where we're so different. You and I may love the year long because, oh, my God, we get to rest. I get to show up in my secret Facebook group, like, whenever I want.
Whenever I want. I know. I get to deepen relationships, and I don't have to be on the launch train.
Yep, all of the above.
Like,
right?
Every 3 months. Yeah, which
my
really
friend
depletes
loves that.
Me. Yeah, mm-hmm. and other people love it.
Mm-hmm. And other people love it. So there's no one business model. And so that, you know, it's like each creative entrepreneur really checking in and figuring out what's the business model of that, you know, and you know, I do believe it takes some years of like doing ones that feel good but not great, you know, it takes a while to really mm-hmm. hone that and putting in the work, I feel, you know, to do that. So that's a little bit about creative entrepreneurs. I mean there's also just that we, as I was saying, like, we are so afraid of looking at the numbers, or we don't feel like we can learn the whole language of money, or realize, wait a second, we can ask for support and we need a whole financial support team. So, well, I did my own bookkeeping for 12 years because it was so unknown and foreign to me that I wanted that practice, right? But 2 years ago, I handed over my bookkeeping to an incredible bookkeeper, her and her husband, Jess Salzman, and her husband, Michael, and they do my books now, my business books, and then I look at them monthly, and then I hired a new accountant recently that had more of a firm that could help us. So, you know, we need financial support teams, whether that's a bookkeeper, a bookkeeping trainer, whether it's a financial coach to help us do the money mapping and planning, or an accountant or a financial planner. There's just, you know, that's another thing as creative entrepreneurs, that we don't need to add all of them at once. You know, we need to pace it out. And sometimes we say, oh, we can't afford that, right? And sometimes I think it's great to bootstrap. And I did that for years. And then other times, if you're in a big growth year, sometimes you need to invest and go get that credit line or go get that higher level accountant to help you oversee, you know, a new growth period. And the investment is really important. So that's another thing about creative entrepreneurs is, you know, we need support if we're going to move beyond bootstrapping into, you know, new levels of growth. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, thank you. You've already given us so much.
You're welcome.
is there anything else? I'll just circle back to one thing that you said about money practices, with that there's money practices for multiple aspects or multiple layers, the practical, the spiritual, the emotional. Any last comments about how to work on those multiple levels? I just asked you the question that you could probably spend days answering.
That's okay. I'll reiterate a few and then say one new one. So on the emotional level, it's the body check-ins, and not just, you know, it's bringing them to all your money interactions, all of them. And note, you know, bringing the body check-in before it's going to happen, during the event, and after it, to learn, right? And sometimes we don't catch ourselves till after it or after we've had a little freak out. That's okay. You just keep, you know, bringing it back to we're inviting in body check-ins on a daily basis. And my folks really surprise themselves. They'll be in the grocery store and suddenly, you know that cartoon with a little dog, and he's always like, squirrel, squirrel. And he's like, always, So I want my folks to do that with a body check-in, like just spontaneously be going through their lives and go body check-in. And then just stop and pause and give them, you know, give themselves a gift of a body check-in in the grocery store. That in itself will shift so much. Then on a practical level, start having money dates. And whether it's daily for the beginning to get the grooves going, or every few days, or twice a week for 30 minutes, begin to have money dates. And money dates are, you know, body check-in, and then start learning a bookkeeping system or getting some more hand-holding with someone on a financial support, on someone on your financial support team, and learning the language of numbers and learning how to read your reports. And this is not a quick thing. I mean, you know, people in do my year-long, and now they're coming back, you know, for their second year, third year, just because it's like it's an entire framework and tools and practices that each year you update and fine-tune, and I am too, you know, always, and will be for years to come. So that's some of the practical. I think I would say one more piece to add, which I know your folks will appreciate, is what I call more of the spiritual side, and I could speak so much more to this, and I know you do too, so I'll just give one, you know, and it's trust. And it's, how do we cultivate our capacity for more trust in our relationship to money? And for me, that's everything from realizing that there's ups and downs in life, there's ebbs and flows, there's cycles. And there's ebbs and flows and cycles with our relationship to money and with our money as well. So it's not this every year we earn more and save more and give more, right? Some years we're doing that. And then other years, huge transition happens, new baby happens, someone passes away, you know, on and on. And we're just hoping to live within our means that year, right? So I want everyone to really get that there's ebbs and flows, ups and downs in money as well, and that's okay. And everyone, I know that's how it is. If we are honored to have a long life, we're going to have that. So trust for me bumps up against like bringing in the body check-in and a deeper witness around ups and downs and bringing that reality and concept to our relationship to money. It's, you know, what do we need to do daily to bring in more trust? that's where I hike every day. I'm sure all your folks have their yoga practice and other things. So for me, I feel like that's how I'm working on trust in my life and in money, is I go on my hikes every day, and that's where I clear my mind and I clear my energy and on and on. And I get really clear, right, and present. This also has to do with just how do you feel enoughness, you know, when you don't feel it, or how do you cultivate more gratitude as we're striving? As, you know, if we're creative entrepreneurs, we're striving. Like, there's something that we're going for. And how do we keep doing that in the face of how do we feel enoughness and presence and joy and gratitude now? So there's a lot of deeper practices around enoughness and gratitude and trust and trusting in our timing as well that I bring in. So I think that completes my piece for now around, you know, little things to think about or next steps or a tool or a practice that everyone who's listening can continue today, you know, forward.
Wonderful. Thank you. I think that's a great place for us to conclude.
Yeah.
Thank you again, Barry. It's a lovely conversation. Always a delight to speak with you. And good luck today. I know that you were excited about what is happening there. So much is happening. Exciting things with your book and then a new project and then a personal event today. So best to you.
Rebecca, blessings to you and everyone who, you know, joined on this journey. You guys are 10 months in, and it's, you know, it's a beautiful blessing and a commitment, and I love the year-long program. I love hearing that folks are, you know, are doing that. So blessings to all of you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Be well.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Be well. Take care.